हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 38, chapter 76, verses 26 to 33. No, excuse me, above that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the heroes of the Yadu dynasty were determined to either die on the battlefield or gain victory. They were confident of the fact that if they would die in the fighting, they would attain a heavenly planet. And if they would come out victorious, they would enjoy the world. Right? So that conviction that the Vedas says that this is what it is, and they're committed to that, then that's a very important thing. That one appreciates the authority of the Vedas. And so in this case, we would not take something only this far. But the point is that they're accepting the position of the soul, accepting how they structure the universe, the laws of the universe, and they're committed to their duties based on that. Then this is human life, right? When you have that faith in the Vedas and this and that. Is that... Verses 26 to 33, Prajumna removed from the battlefield. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Shalva's minister, Juman, previously wounded by Sri Prajumna, now ran up to him and, roaring loudly, struck him with his club of black steel. Prajumna's driver, the son of Daruka, thought that his valiant master's chest had been shattered by the club. Knowing well his religious duty, he removed Prajumna from the battlefield. The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that actually Lord Prajumna has a Satchidananda body, an eternal spiritual form that can never be wounded by mundane weapons. Daruka's son, however, was a great devotee of the Lord, and out of intense love he feared for the safety of his master and thus removed him from the battlefield. Right? Because you're talking about relationships here, so you're based on that. That's what's going on. Because by tattva, that's there, but if we go by tattva on everything, then will there be any interaction? Will there be any relationships? No. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes, the name of Shalva's commander-in-chief was Juman. He was very powerful, and although bitten by 25 of Prajumna's arrows, he suddenly attacked Prajumna with his fierce club and struck him so strongly that Prajumna became unconscious. Immediately there was a roaring. Now he is dead. Now he is dead. The force of the club on Prajumna's chest was very severe, enough to tear asunder the chest of an ordinary man. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Prajumna's chariot was being driven by the son of Daruka, according to Vedic military principles. The chariot driver and the hero on the chariot must cooperate during the fighting. As such, because it was the duty of the chariot driver to take care of the hero on the chariot during the dangerous and precarious fighting, Daruka's son removed Prajumna from the battlefield. 2 hours later, in a quiet place, Prajumna regained consciousness, and when he saw that he was in a place other than the battlefield, he addressed the charioteer and condemned him. Sukadeva Goswami continues. Yeah. Quickly regaining consciousness, Lord Krishna's son Prajumna said to his charioteer, O driver, this is abominable for me to have been removed from the battlefield. Except for me, no one born in the Yadu dynasty has ever been known to abandon the battlefield. My reputation has now been stained by a driver who thinks like a eunuch. What will I say to my fathers, Rama and Keshava? Would I return to them after having simply fled the battle? What can I tell them that will benefit my honor? Certainly my sisters-in-law will laugh at me and say, O hero, tell us how in the world your enemies turned you into such a coward in battle. Footnote 19, might you say. Kshatriya fun. Having fallen from my great dharma, I will be mocked. The wives of my elder cousins will speak, tell us how you became impotent because of the enemies, O hero. They will joke in saying this. Or will this weakness be described by others? It will not be spoken by anyone. The meaning they will convey is, you should not be embarrassed. He says this to scold his charioteer. Such wounding words would not actually be said by his relatives. Srila Jiva Goswami. No one's going to say this. He's just saying this because, you know, he wants to get back on the battlefield. Quickly regaining consciousness, Lord Krishna's son, Prajumna, said to his charioteer, okay, we already did that, we're down to here, okay. The driver replied, O long-lived one, I have done this knowing fully well my prescribed duty. O my lord, the chariot driver must protect the master of the chariot when he's in danger, and the master must also protect his driver. With this rule in mind, I removed you from the battlefield, since you had been struck unconscious by your enemy's club, and I thought you were seriously injured. Right? So, now, you know, it concludes with that. So the point is he's made a statement. So it wasn't just sentiment or out of fear that he left the battlefield. It's because of his duties. And he quotes what the duties are. So having quoted this, then there's nothing more to be said. And no one else is going to say anything either.
Maharaj, there has to be a proper understanding between the driver and the person. Because otherwise, if the driver performs a particular action, and if the... and if the main person, he doesn't agree to it, then there can be some problems, right? So...
means everybody's, according to the Vedic version, then everybody's duties, then it makes it that you're in a cooperative position. Yeah. That's what's important about the Vedic duties. It's just like, okay, someone's an advisor, right? And someone else has brought them in to advise, but they're the one that's actually going to carry it out. Right? So that means that how far does the duty of the advisor go? Right? Only as far as advice. Trying to control the situation, this, that, that's not their business. They've come for advice, so when they're asked advice, they give advice. If they're not asked, they don't give. Right? So now, to do that, now to give advice and try to control the whole situation, is that actually a difficult position? If you have an opinion on everything. Mm-hmm. No, it's very natural for you. Mm-hmm. Right? But now, to be able to give advice only when asked, and when not asked and not give advice, what does that require?
Control
of the senses, the mind, the prestige, the idea that I'm the controller, mm-hmm. all these kind of things. So in other words, who can do that? Right? From it. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So now... To have that authority and that one is doing, but to listen to authority above you, what does that take in a kshatriya?
Yes.
That takes character. But to not listen, like Duryodhana, does that take any character? No. So the Vedic system is perfectly designed that everybody has their position, but the difficulty in applying it. It requires good qualities. It requires that you actually, at least in theory, function from the mode of goodness. Right? At least you have to accept it, that this is there, this is what the shastra, this is what should be done. Whether you're doing it for that or not, whether you want to do it or not, that's another thing, but at least you're accepting it. So that's the weakness in the Vedic system. Not that, oh, it can't be applied in this age. All it is what we're saying is, I don't have the character to follow it. That's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And we're not about to let the, you know, the Vedic culture, or what's known now as the Indian culture, be superior to anything in the West. You know what I'm saying? So we wouldn't want that, right? So it has to be the Western is the superior culture. So naturally you would not want the Vedic culture to be superior because I can't do it. Now, what we're not bringing out in the equation is I can't follow and perform and lead the Western culture either, you know, but I'm a devotee, so devotees can do anything. We don't care about the rules, but I'm definitely not going to follow the Vedic. So therefore, because I'm a devotee, now I can claim that I'm following the Western and doing a great job of it, even though I wouldn't know what I'm doing and I'm doing a terrible job. Right. Yeah, so here it's just a matter of duty. If everyone does their duty, then it works. Because can you drive and fight at the same time? Right? Not so easy. So someone drives, someone fights. But now that means the driver has to be seeing to the best benefit, what's best for fighting and what's best for the warrior. And the warrior has to be fighting and saying what's best to protect the chariot driver. In other words, he has to protect the chariot driver. You know? Like that. So that's the point. So they protect each other. They do their job, so it's and they protect each other. So that's that cooperation, then it's done there. And so therefore then, but in this, of the two, then the warrior is the main and the chariot driver is the assistant. Right? It's not driving around is the main thing, like that. That's only if you're on Hollywood Boulevard. Then it's about driving around. You know, who's getting anywhere on Hollywood Boulevard, right? You know, that's just driving around. Because if you want to get somewhere, you don't go on Hollywood. You go other streets like that. That one's too busy, right? Okay, conclusion. The heroes of the Yadu dynasty were determined either to die on the battlefield or to gain victory. They were confident in the fact that they would die in the fighting. They would attain a heavenly planet. And if they would come out victorious, they would enjoy the earth, right? So that commitment, that focus, that ability to know what one's duty is and perform it. And we see here, as it concluded nicely, Prajumna, his duty is to fight, not to leave the battle. So he's thinking that this is improper. But Daruka's son points out as yes, but it's also proper for me to take care. You are unconscious, so therefore it's my business to take care. Because otherwise, what will you do on the battlefield? You're unconscious, they may come and take you off or stuff. So it's his best business to see to that, right?
This commitment to do the duty is a varna.
Means that it's all. Means by this, then varna. Yes, the kshatriya means it's in the varna. But you see is that they have that same thing in the ashram. Because whatever they say has to be done. Right? So even when it comes to ashram elements, that Kunti Devi has said something, and then when she finds out it wasn't exactly an ideal arrangement, but then, you know, it, because she said it has to be done. Otherwise, then what happens, people say, oh, well, they said this, and then they change, so then they can't discriminate. That's the whole point. Common person can't discriminate. So therefore, the leaders of society have to be very careful that they act in a way that it won't upset the common person because they don't have that discrimination. They can't tell the difference between one thing and another. They just put in the general categories that you can, you know, have something to talk about on Facebook. Right? Because that's the whole point that is there. Because that is, because if you distinguish, then, you know, like that. And if I distinguish, then there's no gossip. I can't be envious of people. I can't be jealous. I can't feel entitled to things. I can't be angry. I can't, you know, so a whole range of emotional experiences I remove from my life. Because, and why is that a problem? Because I may not have strong relationships on the, you know, these material relationships that you look for, you know, family and society and all these. So I'm not getting a taste there, so then I get them from these negative things. Right? Because the soul has to taste something. You can't, rasa's there, it's in part, you're conscious, so there's rasa. So therefore I'll get it from the negative. Point is, you gotta get. Just like, okay, if I have proper nutritious food, I'll eat that, but if I'm hungry and there's nothing else, you eat junk food. It's just the way it goes. Right? You know, you don't not eat, you know, you eat your bag of chips or whatever, you know, stuff you get your hands on. So that's the whole point, is that you'll get it from somewhere. So then the problem comes up is that in the performance of duties, then that's what actually generates the relationships and everything like that. But because it's motive goodness, it's not about yourself, so I don't see what I'll benefit. So minimum, okay, if function and passion, then the benefit I'll get from it, that's why I can do. So if someone's pointed out, I can't understand, no one's pointed out what the benefit is, then why I should do it. You know, it's just like, okay, why should I do this samskar? Okay, then if you have the child, you sit in the, you know, and the mother and child then stay in the same place for the first 3 months, like that, and don't go out, don't go around and all that, then you know, one, it's beneficial because, you know, their, how you say, their health is delicate, so that by being in that one place, then they both, you know, that it's better for the health. Two is by being together, then they bond. It's something, you know, straightforward they can get into. The mother's going to be in the child is going to get into somebody, so they're there with the mother, they'll get into them. You know, it's like the baby ducks hatch and the dog happens to be there, so the dog's the mommy, you know, so then, you know, just the way it works, right? So like that. But then there's the other principle of, in that we'll have all these, this, that, you know, is that, no, but, you know, it doesn't matter, it's all that Krishna and that. But then if you point out also the aspect of that, you're being fixed in place, so then because you're in fixed residence, therefore the child will be able to be fixed in residence. Therefore, then that's there. Just like, like you hear of village people, they've been in the village their whole life. But a lot of city people, they haven't been in that city their whole life. Because they're always moving, so they can't stay. But the village person, they're born there, they just stay there, and they didn't move around, and so therefore they're able to stay. You know, so then you start looking at it, and then there's so many benefits. Right? But we'll say, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we're above the rules, this is all mundane, we don't need any of this. Right? We don't need bonding between the parent and child. We don't need the health of the parent and the child. We don't need the stability of the parent and child. Right? Because these are all just mundane things, and that's why we talk about community and economics and justice and people supporting each other, because it's all purely spiritual. Yes. No? Okay, chapter 77. Lord Krishna, so that's why you have that commitment to the Vedic authority, then all these relationships blossom. And if we don't, if you can't commit to Vedic authority, you can't commit to anything. It's that simple. We try not to be that direct, but if you can't have a relationship with the Vedas, guaranteed you cannot have a relationship with anybody. Some people a little bit more here and there, because it works for you at this moment. But other than that, it won't, because the Veda is Krishna. And if you can't have a relationship with Krishna, how do you have a relationship with the part and parcel? I can't have a relationship with a person, but I can have a relationship with their left little toe. And actually, it's not really the toe, just the toenail. You know, it's a cool toenail. I like it.
It's a start.
Yeah, it's a start. Yeah. Chapter 77. Lord Krishna slays the demon Shalva. Pratigya. Lord Krishna's bewilderment is another opulence of his supreme personality. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna disposed of Shalva, the master of deception, and destroyed his airship Shova. Right? And he did it really well. That's why he said he slayed it. Right? Having been removed from the battlefield, Pradyumna was extremely ashamed, and he ordered his driver to take his chariot once again into the presence of Dhuman. As Pradyumna fought with Dhuman, other Yadava heroes like Gada, Satyaki, and Samba began to create havoc among Shalva's army. The battle continued in this way for 27 days and nights, right? Now, it would normally end in the day, but who are you fighting with? Demons. So they couldn't care less. They don't really make a distinction. Because where they're from, there is no day and night. So what's this, you know, what's this thing that you guys got up here? Right, you know?
I think this is 27, the figure.
Hmm?
The figure is 27 that we have for Jammu and Krishna also, the fight is
27. Yeah, no, 27 seems to be that number.
Huh?
Yeah, 27. And it's a good, it means 27 days you get the full taste.
28.
Yeah, 28th, and it's okay. Then they're done that.
It's a Vedic standard.
Yeah. Like that, so. When Lord Krishna returned to Dwarka, he found it under siege. At once he ordered Dwarka to drive him into the battlefield. Suddenly Shalva noticed the Lord and threw a spear at Krishna's charioteer. Right, because then you get rid of the charioteer, you get rid of him. Because they can't defeat him, you go after the charioteer. Yeah. Right, but that's that. You know, that's not. If people do it, so that's why the charioteer has to. I mean, the warrior has to protect the charioteer. But the Lord shattered the weapon into hundreds of pieces and pierced Shalva and his Shalva vehicle with numerous arrows. Shalva responded by shooting an arrow that struck Krishna's left arm. Amazingly, the Lord dropped the Sharanga bow he was holding in his left hand. The demigods watching the battle cried out in alarm upon seeing the bow fall, while Shava took the opportunity to insult Krishna. Right? Because then when something goes well, he gets more inspired, so then the fight goes on nicely. Because otherwise, if you defeat the guy, you know, in the first move, where's the fight, right? No, you let it go on, you know? Lord Krishna then struck Shava with his club, but the demon, vomiting blood, disappeared. A moment later, a man came before Lord Krishna and, after offering him obeisances, introduced him as a messenger from Mother Devaki. The man informed the Lord that his father, Vasudeva, had been kidnapped by Shava. Upon hearing this, Lord Krishna seemed to lament like an ordinary man. Shava then led forward someone who looked just like Vasudeva, decapitated him, and took the head with him into his Shava ship. Lord Sri Krishna, however, could understand the magic tricks of Shava. Thus, he pierced Shava with a shower of arrows and struck the Shava vehicle with his club, demolishing it. Shava descended from his airplane and rushed towards Lord Krishna to attack him. But the Lord took up his Sudarshana disc and severed Shava's head from his body. With the killing of Shava, the demons in the sky played kettle drums in jubilation. Who'd they say?
Demons.
Well, they should have. The demigods in the sky played kettle drums in jubilation. The demon Dantavakra then took a vow to avenge his friend's death, his friend Shalva's death. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. 1 to 5, Prajumna returns to the battlefield. 6 to 37, Lord Krishna kills Shalva. Verses 1 to 5, Prajumna returns to the battlefield. Sukadeva Goswami said, after refreshing himself with water, putting on his armor, and picking up his bow, Lord Prajumna told his driver, take me back to where the hero Dhuman is standing. In Prajumna's presence, Dhuman had been devastating his army. In absence, Dhuman had been devastating his army. But now Prajumna counterattacked Dhuman and, smiling, pierced him with 8 Naracha arrows. The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments that Prajumna challenged Dhuman, saying, now see if you can strike me. After saying this and allowing Dhuman to shoot his weapons, Prajumna released his own deadly arrows. Sukadev Goswami continued, with 4 of these arrows, he struck Dhuman's 4 horses. With 1 arrow, his driver. With 2 more arrows, his bow and chariot flag. And with the last arrow, Dhuman's head. Gada, Satiki, Shamba, and others began killing Shalva's army. And thus all the soldiers inside the airship began falling into the ocean, their necks severed. As the Yadu and Shalva's followers thus went on attacking one another, the tumultuous, fearsome battle continued for 27 days and nights. Verses 6 to 37. Lord Krishna kills Shalva. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, invited by Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, Lord Krishna had gone to Indraprastha. Now that the Rajasuya sacrifice had been completed and Shishupal killed, the Lord began to see inauspicious omens. So he took leave of the Kuru elders and the great sages, and also of Prita and her sons, and returned to Dwarka. The Lord said to himself, because I have come here with my respected elder brother, kings partial to Shishupal may well be attacking my capital city. Sukadeva Goswami continued, after he arrived in Dwarka, he saw how his people were threatened with destruction, and also saw Shalva and his Shalva airship. Lord Krishna arranged for the city's defense, and then addressed Daruka as follows. The BBT purport states, Lord Krishna placed Sri Balaram in a strategic position to guard the city, and he also appointed a special guard for Sri Rukmini and other queens inside the palaces. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, by a secret route, special soldiers conveyed the queens to safety inside Dwarka. Lord Krishna said, O driver, quickly take my chariot near Shalva. Thus, this lord of Shalva is a powerful magician. Don't let him bewilder you. Thus ordered, Daruka took command of the Lord's chariot and drove forth. As the chariot entered the battlefield, everyone there, both friend and foe, caught sight of the emblem of Garuda. When Shalva, the master of a decimated army, saw Lord Krishna approaching, he hurled his spear at the Lord's charioteer. The spear roared frighteningly as it flew across the battlefield. Shalva's hurling spear lit up the whole sky like a mighty meteor. But Lord Shaurya tore the great weapon into hundreds of pieces with his arrows. Lord Krishna then pierced Shalva with 16 arrows and struck the Shubha airship with a deluge of arrows as it darted around the sky. Firing his arrows, the Lord appeared like the sun flooding the heavens with his rays. Shalva then managed to strike Lord Krishna's left arm, which held his blow Sharanga, and, amazingly, Sharanga fell from his hand. Those who witnessed this all cried out in amazement, in dismay. Then the master of Shalva roared loudly and addressed Lord Janardana. Shalva said, "You fool, because in our presence you kidnapped the bride of our friend Shishupal, your own cousin, and because you later murdered him in the sacred assembly while he was inattentive. Today, with my sharp arrows, I will send you to the land of no return." Right, so Shalva's, Shishupal's inattentive, though he's totally focusing on Krishna and all that. But, so I guess he was inattentive to the material and only focused on Krishna, so him killing him at that time, then he went back to Godhead. Right, so. Though you think yourself invincible, I will kill you now if you dare stand before me. Footnote 20. Because you stole the bride of your brother and our friend, and in the assembly, not in the battlefield, you killed him while he was inattentive. I will kill you today. Twaya is repeated to indicate Shalva's hatred of Krishna. Since he is my friend, Shaka, I must take revenge. I will kill you if you stand before me. By this, he indicates that Krishna will flee in fear. Saraswati gives another meaning. O wise one, Amudha, Shishupal was our friend and brother. You took your own wife, since she is Lakshmi, while we watched with indifference. You killed our friend who was acting wildly and using bad words like a drunkard. Srila Jiva Goswami.
Well, it seems like you're in this moment just before killing somebody. People tend to talk like that. Why is this happening? Because we see many instances like instead of finishing the business, he's not talking.
I guess the basic underlying principle is there is some respect for the prowess of the enemy rather than there's no respect. Right? So that'll make a difference. So, but the aspect is that it brings out why it's going on. The relationship, it's rasa. So that's why before the battle they may make some comments to increase the mood of chivalry and the fighting spirit. And then if there's a reason, then they may mention it and all these different things, so it's there. Because otherwise, if nothing's mentioned, it's not very satisfying. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So you expect that. You see it in the more dramatic performances. They always go on a whole big thing, and this one, this, and that. And, you know, so many range of emotions and like that. But, you know, so it gives more satisfaction. Because it's ultimately about rasa. That's why it said, they know if they defeat the other person on the battlefield, they'll enjoy it. If not, they'll go to the heavenly planet. So to them, it doesn't matter. You know, but he's made his attempt to avenge his friend. If that's successful, then he sees the opportunity now. It's also, you could say, in one sense, well, this guy's person, it was pride, because he was a little successful. Mm-hmm. But it's all about the taste of these things. That's why you see, like, older renditions of things sometimes is more difficult, because there's so much more emotion going on where you're saying, oh, here's your opportunity. But there's an emotion there, there's the feelings, and so those are considered, those are important. So, you know, and that's why the story is about them, not us. Or,
it seems during the Vedic times, in the Vedic times, the friendship is given very much importance, and people die for each other.
The friendship is given importance, yes.
Today the friendship is very superficial in that sense.
Yes, and nowadays it's less important. Mm-hmm. Yes?
The psychology is that he sees in his mind that he killed him already, so he wants to let him know how he should feel.
Yes, yes. But it's also a lot of time. They generally, it's only in, yes. I would say it's because he feels he has the upper hand. Because you always, many times you see is when you have between the good guy and the bad guy, and the bad guy has an upper hand, then he'll explain the whole thing and show how he's actually at fault and everything like that. Otherwise, he wouldn't say it because he's not in the upper hand. But then he does, and then, you know, naturally the good guy still wins, and then it all works out. So, yeah, that false ego, that he thinks he has the upper hand. It's a good point. So, you know, so.
Maharaj, when already Jarasandha has been killed and Shishupala has been killed, and Shalu, he's insignificant. Why doesn't he learn a lesson that, you know, if such powerful demons can be killed, you know, then...
Why doesn't he know?
Because one is that smart if he learns from...
Why isn't he that smart? If he was that smart, he'd probably be in the Himalayas, right? Was Ravana smart? Okay. Because we're talking the mundane aspect here. So, was Ravana good at his brahminical performance, ritualistic performances?
Yes.
Would you say that he was possibly above, you know, your normal standard?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, to be able to do that, the mantras, be able to understand the situations, all these things, does that mean he's intelligent?
Yes.
Yes. He is king of the the demons and all that. And so then he's there, he's got, you know, how you say, a city made of gold. You know, so Prabhupada tells a story about, an elder businessman asked a younger business, you know, budding businessman, are you intelligent? And then the younger man stuck his hands in his pockets to see if there was any money. The other man asked, why are you looking in your pockets? Because if I'm smart, I would be making money. So if I have money, I'm smart. And if I don't have money, it means I'm not smart. Okay? He had a city of gold. Is he smart? Like that. He's the, you know, the king there and running, and he has all these great personalities, you know, who are subservient to him, you know, and willing to give their lives for him. So from that aspect, is he smart? So therefore, from the Brahma, Kshatriya, and Vaishya platforms, all of these, he's smart. But Bali Maharaj has pointed out that Hiranyakashipu, you know, has been killed by this same Vishnu. So, is he smart?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's just the way demons work. Otherwise, they wouldn't be demons. Surya means they surrender to the Lord. Demon means they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They get defeated. Instead of surrendering, they make a new plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Making plans isn't the problem. It's when you make plans with surrender that it's useful.
Mm-hmm.
But they make plans without any surrender. The Supreme Lord said, O dullard, you boast in vain, since you fail to see death standing near you. Real heroes do not talk much, but rather show their prowess in action. So is that your question? So they're real heroes, they won't be talking so much. But that's also one of the talks of the... Having said this, the furious Lord swung his club with frightening power and speed and hit Shalva on the collarbone, making him tremble and vomit blood. But as soon as Lord Achyuta withdrew his club, Shalva disappeared from sight, and a moment later, a man approached the Lord, bowing his head down to him. He announced, Devaki has sent me, and, sobbing, spoke the following words. The man said, O Krishna, Krishna, mighty armed one, who are so affectionate to your parents, Shalva has seized your father and taken him away as a butcher leads an animal to slaughter. When he heard this disturbing news, Lord Krishna, who was playing the role of a mortal man, showed sorrow and compassion. And out of love for his parents, he spoke the following words like an ordinary conditioned soul. Lord Krishna said, Balaram is ever vigilant, and no demigod or demon can defeat him. So how could this insignificant Shalva defeat him and abduct my father? Indeed, fate is all-powerful. After Govinda spoke these words, the master of Shalva again appeared, apparently leading Vasudeva before the Lord. Shalva then spoke as follows. Shalva said, "Here is your dear father who begot you and for whose sake you are living in this world. I shall now kill him before your very eyes. Save him if you can, weakling." Right, so here also, again, speaking, because it just makes it more, it just rubs it in. Right? Because something you said, you finished, you could walk off. But no, as you walk off, have to say something more, right? You know, and then that causes more problem, right? That's just the way it works. After he had mocked the Lord in this way, the magician Shalva appeared to cut off Vasudeva's head with his sword. Taking the head with him, he entered the Shalva vehicle, which was hovering in the sky. By nature, Lord Krishna is full in knowledge, and he possesses unlimited powers of perception. Yet, for a moment, out of great affection for his loved ones, he remained absorbed in the mood of an ordinary man. An ordinary human being. He soon recalled, however, that this was all a demoniac illusion engineered by Maya Dhanava and employed by Shalva. Now alert to the actual situation, Lord Achyuta saw before him on the battlefield neither the messenger nor his father's body. It was as if he had awakened from a dream. Seeing his enemy flying above him in his Shalva plane, the Lord then prepared to kill him. Right? Because now he's gone to the point where, you know, having fun fighting is over. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna's reaction is a conversational point amongst great authorities and saintly persons. How could Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all power and knowledge, be bewildered in such a way? Interesting. So that means the Vishayavakyas and that of the Vedas and Upanishads, and that these are conversational points.
Controversial points.
Controversial. Okay, so then how could this happen like this? Also cause a conversation. But lamentation, agreement, and bewilderment are characteristics of a conditioned soul. But how can such things affect the person of the Supreme, who is full in knowledge, power, and all opulence? Actually, it is not at all possible that Lord Krishna was misled by the mystic jugglery of Salva. He was displaying his pastime in playing the role of a human being. Great saintly persons and sages who are engaged in devotional service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and who have thus achieved the greatest perfection of self-realization, have transcended the bewilderments of the bodily conception of life. Lord Krishna is the ultimate goal of life for such saintly persons. How then could Krishna have been bewildered by the mystic jugglery of Shalva? The conclusion is that Lord Krishna's bewilderment was another opulence of his Supreme Personality. Right? It's just an opulence that he can do that because it pleases him. Right? Even we want to do something that's different, we can't mean that we can do it. But he wants to do it, so he does. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Such is the account given by some sages, a wise king, but those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves, have forgotten their own previous statements." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, "Having presented the story as told by others, now Sukadeva destroys it with this verse. Some sages who are not careful to see the agreement of all the statements before and after have related this story. They did not consider that their words were contradictory to other statements of the Bhagavatam. Krishna did not go to the Rajasuya sacrifice with Balaram, as stated in verse 8, since previously stated that Krishna took permission from Balaram and then went to Intraprastha without him. Thus, how can the words attributed to Krishna in verse 8 be true? Even if they were true, how could Krishna say such things? How did weak Shalva defeat Balaram, unconquerable by devas or demons, and take away my father?" Sukadeva Goswami continued, "How can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection, or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord, whose perception, knowledge, and power are all similarly infinite?" The BBT purport states, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Lamentation, aggrievement, and bewilderment are characteristics of conditioned souls. But how can such things affect the person of the Supreme, who is full of knowledge, power, and all opulence? Actually, it is not at all possible that Lord Krishna was misled by the mystic jugglery of Shalva. He was displaying his pastimes. He was playing his pastime, playing the role of a human being. All the great Bhagavatam commentators conclude that grief, illusion, attachment, and fear, which arise out of ignorance of the soul, can never be present in the transcendental dramatic pastimes enacted by the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami gives many examples from Krishna's pastimes to illustrate this point. For instance, when the cowherd boys entered the mouth of Agasura, Lord Krishna was apparently astonished. Similarly, when Brahma took away Lord Krishna's cowherd boys and calves, the Lord first began to look for them as if he did not know where they were. Thus the Lord plays the part of an ordinary human being so as to relish transcendental pastimes with his devotees. One should never think the personality of Godhead is an ordinary person, as Sukadeva Goswami explains in this and the following verse. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, is it possible that Krishna could be bewildered by Shalva's illusions? How are the affection and lamentation for Vasudev caused by this illusion possible? Nor is it possible that he could have fear of Shalva, and how is it possible for him to let go of his bow Sharanga by that illusion of Shalva? Therefore, Sukadeva speaks this verse. Lamentation and other emotions are of two types, caused by ignorance and caused by knowledge. The emotions described here are possible in people who are ignorant or do not know everything, who are dependent on wrong sources of knowledge. But how is it possible in the Supreme Lord who has unlimited knowledge? The spiritual emotions such as lamentation, possible in those who have knowledge, who are beyond illusion, occur in the devotees. Okay. These occur in the devotees and the Lord, who is the very form of all sweet rasa arising as Sanchari Bhavas as part of knowledge. This can be seen clearly in Damodar pastimes, Krishna crying, and the Purva Rag of the gopis during their Rasa Leela. Fear mentioned in this verse refers to verse 8, that fear is impossible for Krishna. Fear which caused Krishna to flee is not actually fear as mentioned by Uddhava. For a real fear, then the intelligence of the wise would be erroneous, according to the Bhagavatamrita. Such stories prevent the tasting of nectar, like restricting a horse with a halter. This looks serious. It came very, very suddenly. Does it look like it's going to rain immediately, or?
Yes, it's going to rain.
No, but I'm saying, is there enough time to get back to where you were from? That is very sudden. Generally, it starts for a little while first. Yeah, because there's so much wind, and if it's just rain, it's okay. But the rainy season rain is not a problem. Storm rain is a problem. Okay, well, it's stopping now. Huh? Yeah, because it looks like the wind's going down, so you might be able to get back to wherever you're. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki, Chaitanya Gaura Chaitanya.